I find myself right on the edge of creative burnout over the last couple of weeks. I also world premiered my newest solo show just this past weekend. Hello, my name is Brad McIntyre, and you're listening to the Cultivated Playwright Podcast. This is episode 18. So if you have not listened to the previous episode, episode 17, you should probably go back and do that. This is kind of a two-part thing, episode 17 and episode 18. So in episode 17, the previous episode, I outlined putting together the play which I'm going to discuss in this episode. It's called The Beast of Hyperborea, and it is a one-person show in the vein of old Victorian adventure fiction. And I premiered it July 20th, just 2 days ago, at the time of this recording, at the Festival of Independent Theaters, the FIT, F-I-T, which takes place in Dallas every year during the summertime. And it went pretty well, actually. The premiere was Saturday night at 8 o'clock, which was a wonderful, wonderful time slot. And I was very nervous about presenting it, and it went surprisingly well. I put in a tremendous amount of work to get that play on its feet. And the last ingredient that was added was the audience. In fact, the festival director after the show came up, his name's David, and I referenced him in the previous episode, and he said, most shows need an audience, but you, Brad, need an audience. And he's right. The audience added a whole other dimension. I was very worried about the pacing of the show. But when you put me in front of an audience, I seem to haul ass, so to speak, and my energy levels skyrocket. So it actually came off very well. I had a very close friend, my good friend, who actually has been on this podcast in the past, Jeff Hernandez, in one of the previous episodes. Anyway, he came to see opening night, and we went out for beers afterwards, and he was actually very complimentary. He said it was one of the better things he's seen me do, which I was very pleased to hear. My parents came the next day, so I had a Sunday matinee, like a late matinee, like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the following day. And my parents brought some friends of theirs, and they were very complimentary as well. Sometimes, because I'm their son, they're very supportive of me, but they don't understand me that well. And my theater activities, now that I'm in my 40s, they take for granted, basically. They're like, oh, that's that thing that Brad does. And they never assign, like, a value to it. Like, they don't quality check what I do. It's their parents, and they're proud that I even do it, especially since it's kind of a thing that I, quote-unquote, should have grown out of. But the last couple of times they've seen me perform, I think they can appreciate how much I've worked and how far I've come as a performer, and definitely as a writer for works for the stage. So that was really pleasing. It was not an unqualified success. So in the play, I do a front roll over my shoulder. One of the characters knows jujitsu and flips another one of the characters. So I physically do like a little flip on stage. And the opening night, I fell completely wrong and bruised. I think I bruised the top of my collarbone. I don't know. My shoulder just hurt. I thought my arm was going to fall off about 2 hours after the show ended. Adrenaline kind of saw me through the show itself. But as soon as I got backstage and started changing costumes, oh, man. And my shoulder still aches. It's been a couple of days, and it's still, I have Tiger Balm on it all the time. I'm taking the strongest ibuprofens I can get a hold of. It's... I'm just not as young as I used to be, and I just hit the role the wrong way. The next day, on the Sunday performance, I was super worried about it. Because it hurt to a point where I couldn't lift my arm up. Like, I have, like, internal bruising, I believe. And I think it's going to go away over time. But not being able to lift your right arm, above elbow height is a major detriment to a highly physical show. So I took some ibuprofen and slept as much as I could and tried to work it out and put a lot of Tiger Balm on it. And I was able to move my arm and perform close to normal as far as most of the show went. But when it came to that flip, I did the whole thing in very slow motion and made sort of a theatrical moment out of it. And I have another show coming up later this week on Thursday, my third show of this particular play at this festival, and I probably will probably do it in slow motion there too. I hate to slow down for that moment because I want to do the flip the way I envision it, but my old man dad bod just doesn't do what I want it to do. So that's the price I pay for being out of shape and trying to do things like this. The reviews have come out, and they are generally pretty positive, to tell the truth. A local website named Theater Jones came and watched the show. They sent a reporter out to see it, a critic, and she wrote some pretty nice things. She called it a ripping yarn in the grand old tradition, and said that it had a lot of heart, and that it was a can't-miss show in her book. So that's nice. That was good. And she found the final moments of the show unexpectedly poignant, quote-unquote. So it's nice to get good reviews. Due to the amount of work that I put into this and how hard and difficult I found it to put together, and I want to say this out loud, most of the time I don't have as hard a time bringing something into the world, a creative endeavor. Most of the time I have a lot longer time frame, and it works its way in progressive chunks forward. So I don't have to just premiere it for the press and for the audiences fully formed all at once. Oftentimes, there's a series of workshops or readings, salons, that kind of thing. But in this instance, I had just about 5 weeks to just pretty much write the entire thing, memorize it, design it, rehearse it, and then premiere it. So it was a very fast turnaround. This show, The Beast of Hyperborea. I have to do it a couple of more times during this festival. I think I have 5 to 6 performances total. It plays until the beginning of August. August 3rd is my final show. And I'm looking forward to performing it. I haven't let up rehearsing it. I've been rehearsing it every day. I took one day, basically today, I've taken off, but I will be rehearsing it every night and every day until I rehearse it again. The trap is to relax and not, like, put it aside and say, oh, I've done that, but I haven't. I've just started the run of it. And because it's a festival, there's a couple of days off between every show. So I have till Thursday until I have to do it again, the 25th. So until then, I have to keep sharp and keep it up to par. I can't move on to other projects. I have to stay in it, basically. And that's okay. I have started to really enjoy the show. That's the other thing I wanted to say. There's a point after all of the hard work, when you've invented the characters and worked on the delivery and the pacing and make sure the story is clear, make sure the staging makes sense and that it is clear. I'm a big sucker for precision, by the way, concise stage pictures, very spontaneous but very clear movements around the stage. And this is because I come from a directing background as well. I'm a director of other people as well as myself. Anyway, there's a lot of hard work to go into it, and eventually you get to just perform the play. And this, the performance of it, literally the performance in front of the audience, although it does still make me very nervous, and I still get some degree of stage fright, more with this particular production than other productions, to tell the truth, because the turnaround between being comfortable with it and then presenting it for an audience was so fast. It becomes fun to do. Like, it's fun to perform it for an audience, to hear the audience's reaction, to see if the jokes land, to see if the story can be followed, pay attention if people are paying attention to what they need to pay attention to, and hopefully deliver a really powerful and engaging evening of theater. That's kind of the goal behind the thing, is to have people follow the story and be engaged in it and turn in just a really solid, wonderful, you know, make them feel good about being in the theater space kind of show. And so hopefully I've done that. And after this, I will put it away for a while. But now that I have a fully created show, I will be able to take it to festivals in the future. And I probably won't do that until next year. But it's nice to have another you know, chapter in my body of work, so to speak, that I can pull out and work on and just kind of bring it back up to par before I need to do it again in the future. So that's really nice. That's really nice. Also, because this is a world premiere, it's nice to work the bugs out. There are a couple of little tiny moments here and there. I'm sure most playwrights are this way when they hear their work out loud during their first production, that they're like, oh, I need to go back and fix that or make that a little bit clearer. So I have one or two of those that I want to kind of fix in this particular production for the future. But I'd be really worried if that wasn't the case. If it were quote-unquote perfect, it would not be as interesting to me any longer. I like that there's a little bit more to work on. In fact, there's always more to work on. The more I do these solo shows, the more I find there's more to discover every time. They grow in depth. I find out more discoveries, and it gets deeper and deeper, and I get more into it over time. So after this first production, it will reinvent itself every time I remount the play, every time I produce it again in the future. So I want to keep this episode pretty short, so I'm going to wrap it up. The takeaway here is, yes, it was very successful opening night, and the hard work that I outlined in the previous episode paid off. And again, my theory of life is you have to struggle, you have to pay for the consequences you get, and if you want successful consequences, you have to really, really put in the sacrificial hours of hard work and time and energy and love to do that, to get that. And if you don't, you get the consequences that correlate with the amount of work you do. So if you don't do the work, your success reflects that. I want to comment before I let you go here, though. I've said this at the top of the episode and in last episode. I'm very close to being burned out. And although I feel proud of the accomplishment, I don't feel elated. The accomplishment is an accomplishment. The show has come together and has been presented for an audience. And I'm proud of the fact that I put it together and pulled it off and people liked it. But I'm not standing on the hilltop, you know, yelling at the wind that I'm super, super elated and excited that this happened. My excitement is pretty muted, to tell the truth, because I kind of want it to be over with. I want to be done with this project. I have fought to stay in the project, keep my mind in it, and keep myself in it. And I still have to keep working on it while I'm running the play. I don't believe in rehearsals stopping at opening night. I do believe it can get better over the run, and that's how I operate. Which means I still have to give up other things in life for the run of this play. Until August the 3rd, I'll still be working on it. And I think that's okay. I think that's the way I operate. But it is definitely a long trudge, and I'm admittedly over it. Like, I'm not over the play, but I'm over artistic endeavors as a whole right now. I kind of want to take a break and live life as a normal person and wait until I get restless again and wait until I have this itch, wait until I feel the urge to get back in it and have something to create and share with the world. And I think this is okay. I don't think it should be forced, and I'm not under contract. I'm an artist who self-initiates, so I don't have deadlines to meet. I don't work on commission. I don't freelance and job in and do mercenary work. I only do stuff on my own terms. So my terms at the moment are saying, you need to take a break. Life is moving too fast. You have a son. I want to be more attentive to my marriage and to my daily life. And I don't want to stress about creative things. When it stops being fun and becomes this kind of stressful trudge, that kind of becomes a warning to me, and maybe it does to you too if you're an artist, that maybe you should back off of things for a while. So that's what I'm going to do. Anyway, I want to say thanks for listening. that pretty much concludes this little two-part series and this particular episode. You can find information about me on my website, bradmcintyre.com. I've posted the review that I was just quoting from earlier on the website, as well as there's a synopsis of the play and some photographs. You can also catch my links to all my social media accounts, and you can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also hear it apparently on iHeartRadio. The iHeartRadio app I just discovered literally last night has this podcast. I don't encourage anybody to listen to it on iHeartRadio, though. iHeartRadio seemed to just snag it off the internet. I didn't submit it to iHeartRadio. I didn't know it was on there until I heard somebody else's podcast was put on iHeartRadio. So the revenue for you listening on iHeartRadio will always go to iHeartRadio. And if that's the only way you can get this podcast, you know, feel free. It's a platform for listening to podcasts. I just thought it was really shady and sketchy that somehow, without running it by the creator of the podcast, iHeartRadio just put my podcast up on it. And I'm a rinky-dink small operation. I'm not like Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss or somebody really big. I'm the Cultivated Playwright podcast. I think there's like maybe five or six of you out there that even listen to this. But somehow it got on iHeartRadio, and I've decided to leave it alone and leave it on there. It's essentially like, you know, putting it on Stitcher or some other podcast platform, which, you know, Stitcher doesn't pay me for posting stuff on Stitcher. They get to run their own ads. Apple Podcasts doesn't pay me. I don't get a cut. The trafficking of you listening on one of those other platforms, those platforms benefit from this content. And since I'm doing a free podcast, I don't have sponsors, and this is just in my free time, I don't mind so much. But it seemed pretty sketchy and pretty shady for iHeartRadio just to snag my stuff off the internet without even consulting me, and just throwing it up on their website for people to traffic. They boast that they have 250,000 podcasts to offer on their app, and I wonder if any of those podcasts gave permission for their podcast to be placed on that particular app. So, though I would prefer you listen through Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, or even better yet, just go to the website for the Cultivated Playwright podcast. If you have to get it through iHeartRadio, then I'd rather you listen than not listen. It's just I kind of want to be clear from the artistic side of things. They just took it. They just posted it on their own. I did not submit it to iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio just scoured the internet and just picked it up on their own. I didn't get that off my chest because I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I could go through the energy of trying to delete it and take it off of iHeartRadio, but it doesn't really hurt. It's just one of those etiquette things where I'm like, this is not the proper way to do these things, iHeartRadio, you giant corporate entity. So, I don't know. If you care about those things, I encourage you not to listen to this through iHeartRadio. Totally not a fan of iHeartRadio. Just saying it. I've said their name enough already. Okay, all right. I'm stepping off my soapbox. Thanks for listening. I really, really appreciate it. And have a good day.